Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 28, 2020. A senior U.S. official wants South Sudanese leaders to form a unity government by next month.
We want the process to succeed. We want the people of South Sudan to win. They have suffered enough. They have been abused enough. The elites need to get to the point of serving their own people instead of their own selfish interests.
And some South Sudanese airport officials are released after a court ruling.
The day that I'm out of the prison after 1 year and 3 months, as you have said, from national security to Juba Central Prison Detention Center. So it was last Friday, the 24th of January, that I was at last set free and found innocent.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of African Affairs, Thibault Nagy, recently concluded a trip to Cameroon, Kenya, Somalia, Sudan, and South Sudan. The U.S. diplomat told reporters via telephone conference from the Sudanese capital Khartoum on Monday that he is hopeful the problems in certain African countries, including South Sudan, will be solved.
It is absolutely possible for the Central African Republic to continue rebuilding the country, to have positive elections in December, and there's even a possibility for moving forward constructively in Somalia. So, you know, we look around the continent, yes, there are some serious problem areas, such as in the Sahel, but in each of the rest of the trouble spots in the continent, there is the possibility and the opportunity for peace, for stability, to help move the entire continent forward.
Nagy says the U.S. is in talks with the new Sudanese government to address challenges facing the Sovereign Council in Khartoum after the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir.
We have to remember one thing. The new government has been in power in Sudan for approximately 6 months. What we're talking about is not just the SSD, the state sponsor of terrorism, but there are, it's literally like peeling away an onion because there are a number of restrictions on what we can and cannot do with Sudan. Remember, these were built up literally over decades. So bottom line, we see the new government of Sudan as a very positive partner with whom we can do business, we can sit down, we can address these issues. We have active negotiations going on in a number of areas. We're optimistic. I wish I could give you a time frame.
On South Sudan, the top U.S. diplomat says the South Sudanese leaders have a huge task ahead of them to form a unity government on time.
There are a number of sticky issues still outstanding between the two principals in South Sudan. We know about those. You mentioned one of them, which is the number of states. And here's the deal. If they try to, cross every T and dot every I, who knows when they can get around to announcing a unity government.
The U.S. Assistant Secretary says President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have no excuse for delaying the formation of the unity government next month.
I made the same pitch to both of the protagonists in the South Sudan scenario because there is no reason why they cannot go ahead, form the unity government, and then agree to deal with those issues. I mean, take the number of states. It's really not going to be a technical decision because you can get a committee of experts to come up with very, very precise lines on, you know, exactly where the state should be. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a political decision. Just like congressional districts in the United States, they're political decisions. That's what they're going to have to agree on.
He says the deadlock over the South Sudan's number of states requires what he calls political decision.
It's going to be a lot of give and take, you know, 10, 23, 24, 32, whatever. They have to agree to it. So why not go ahead, form the unity government, and then deal with these very, very difficult issues, because each party have their own constituents to resolve. Otherwise, we'll be having the same conversation in a year or, who knows, 5 years.
Naji says the Trump administration expects the South Sudanese leaders to end the cycle of violence in their country.
We want the process to succeed. We want the people of South Sudan to win. They have suffered enough. They have been abused enough. The elites need to get to the point of serving their own people instead of their own selfish interests. The international community is sick and tired and fed up with providing the government services that the government of South Sudan should be providing for its own people.
That's Thibaut Nagy, U.S. Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, speaking to reporters via telephone conference from Khartoum on Monday, after his visit to five African countries, including South Sudan. The audio in this story was provided by the U.S. Department of State's Africa's Regional Media Hub. A South Sudan court has acquitted half a dozen airport officials, including the chief executive officer of South Sudan Civil Aviation, who spent 2 years in detention over allegations of corruption. The officials were detained at the National Security Headquarters for 30 days before being transferred to Juba Central Prison. They were charged with an offense. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
Samuel Subek David, the chief executive officer at the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, was arrested in November 2018 while inquiring why 540, a Kenyan airline, did not pay its landing fees. During a court hearing, he was accused of weak administration and having swindled more than $14,000. The South Sudan High Court determined that Subek acted within his jurisdiction and used the money appropriately. Speaking to VOA, Subek confirmed he was released yesterday.
The day that I'm out of the prison after 1 year and 3 months. As you have said, from National Security to Juba Central Prison Detention Center. So it was last Friday, the 24th of January, that I was at last set free and found innocent of all the allegations that were put against me.
Subek accused other civil aviation officials of failing to use proper procedures regarding his arrest. He says the national security was misled in the case against him.
To be honest, me being as a senior public servant officer, I was thrown in this position by a presidential decree, and that was not respected when they were arresting me. There was no warrant of arrest, and the arrest should have come after an audit. Should have happened. Then if they gather the information, concrete information that I was guilty, that is when they should have arrested me. This is why I said the procedure was not proper. They did start with the arrest before the audit.
Subek's defense lawyer, Victor Geoffrey, says the court proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Subek and two other tax collectors, Jacqueline Ibrahim and Simon Sebit, committed no wrongdoing.
Today, the students who that money was used to them are the ones now controlling the airspace of South Sudan. So it was...
So he requested for that money.
He requested for that money, and the money was given, and the money was sent to this student. So the court found that Subek has acted within his powers and within his function.
Victor calls the verdict a victory, and says the ruling will inspire many people to seek justice at the High Court.
There are still members of the judiciary who still live to the principles of the independence of the judiciary. People believe whatever the case the government bring in our country, against anybody, the government wins the case. But this case explains something different, that the right to litigations that is provided in our constitution is the right can be exercised by anybody.
Three others, including two identified using only their first names, Lalam and Ladule, both of whom are 540 employees, had no charges brought against them and were acquitted. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
The Baroness Cox of Queensbury says UNISFA did not protect the people of Abyei when gunmen killed civilians in the village of Kolom last week. She told Abyei community who gathered in Juba to mourn the loss of their loved ones that she will bring up the issue in the British Parliament. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
The Baroness Cox, along with Abyei lawyers and government officials from Abyei, have condemned last week's killings in Kolom village in Abyei, in which the chief Abyei administrator said more than 30 people were killed. Cox says she was in Abyei with a team that consists of a communication specialist, a priest, and journalist. The Baroness Cox is an independent member of the House of Lords and the chief executive of her NGO, Humanitarian Aid Relief Trust, HART. When the attacks took place, she hurried to Kolom shortly afterwards.
We reached Kolom just a few minutes after the massacre had finished, and we were there in a tragic time with the burning homes, the burning bodies in the homes, the mass grave already, and the burning huts. And I think perhaps one of the worst things is that so many children were abducted into slavery.
Member of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly of South Sudan and co-chair of a Abyei Oversight Committee based in Juba, Deng Arokwol, says that there is no political will to conduct the 2013 referendum to join South Sudan by the continuous attacks, and says UNISFA failed their mission when they were brought to Abyei.
We come to the issue of protection. Our feeling is that UNISFA has not lived up to its mandate, because in 2013, you know, while they were in protection of the chief the paramount chief, Kuala Dol by then, they allowed him to be killed.
An advocate and chairman for Abyei Lawyers Network for a Final Solution, Monyluaka Lor Kwol, says the people of Abyei are asking for solutions to end what he calls continuous massacres.
Baroness Cox herself, she knew the weaknesses of UNISFA, okay? And she said to the people that she witnessed, okay, how UNISFA let the people down, how UNISFA failed to protect the massacre that happened, okay? And our people have been pointing this out all the time.
Kwol says the UN must adjust its stated mission in Abyei if it's going to protect its citizens. Dia Tong, president of Abyei community in Juba, says after a string of deadly attacks in the Abyei region, it is high time the international community end the suffering in the area.
I think unless proper measures are taken, this suffering will continue, because Kolom was on the 22nd, Dungop was before that, and Leu was there. Many villages were affected before. And therefore, the focus of our people now is to mourn our dead, but we wanted their soul not just to go cheap like that. We wanted their soul to be rewarded with the final resolution of the issue of Abyei.
Minister of Health, Gender, Child and Social Welfare in Abyei, Nyanwut Mayen Kwol Deng, says the people of Abyei need humanitarian assistance.
Who have really been displaced from their place, like the area of Kolom, and some now they came inside Abyei, but they don't have homes. They have just been gathered in one of the places inside Abyei, and some are suffering in the hospital, and they are facing a lot of problems of those who are injured.
The Abyei community living in Juba also say aid agencies are restricted by the obstruction from the government of Khartoum from operating in the disputed Abyei area. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the World Health Organization has a warning for countries that are evacuating their citizens from China. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should homemade alcohol be outlawed, and should authorities crack down on its use? I think they should neither be outlawed nor cracked down because they are the medicinal part of this alcohol. So maybe they should look at regulating them instead of completely outlawing them.
Rather than you trying to wave it all out, it's better to support the local industries. With that, you are reducing the burden on the government in terms of finance.
We've seen a number of people who have actually become, I would say people have become mad because of such alcohol.
First of all, we are not very sure of its quality. Secondly, it cannot be fully regulated.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our health segment. Today, we are looking at the coronavirus in China. The World Health Organization warns that the evacuation of nationals from China to their home countries carries the risk of spreading the deadly coronavirus. The WHO reports more than 4,400 cases of the disease in China, including 106 deaths. Another 45 cases are confirmed in 13 countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is wrapping up several days of talks with China's President Xi Jinping and other high-level officials in Beijing. They have been discussing measures to protect the health of Chinese citizens and foreigners during the coronavirus outbreak. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says officials also have considered possible alternatives to the evacuation of foreigners from China to ensure no infections are imported back to their home countries. He calls that a real possibility as the incubation period of the coronavirus is between 1 and 14 days. That means people can transmit the virus during that period.
There are possibilities that also asymptomatic people, so people showing no symptoms at all, could be infectious, are definitely interesting and concerning and have to be closer looked at. That's all I can say so far. It's one of the big unknowns about this virus which have to be solved.
Lindemeyer tells VOA that the WHO does not yet have a position on the pros and cons of quarantining nationals upon their return. He says the WHO is waiting for clarification on the dangers of transmitting the disease during the incubation period before issuing advice.
Closely monitoring or even isolating people who are coming back might be a measure yet if we see symptoms. Closely monitoring, or some countries refer to isolating them even for a certain amount of time, is a measure possible. It could help the scenario, it could help prevent the further spread of the virus.
The good news, says Lindemeyer, is that there has not been any major spread of the infection outside of China. The WHO's latest risk assessment of the coronavirus rates the regional and global risk level as high, and that of China as very high. While the virus is not rapidly spreading outside of China, the WHO urges countries to remain vigilant and be prepared. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, doctors in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, have warned residents against a potential outbreak of measles after 8 children were recently diagnosed with the disease. The head of Bor Hospital says parents should take their children for vaccination against diseases like measles. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Twenty-four-year-old Alwel Malwala Nyang sits at the bedside of her one-year-old son Mayen, who was admitted to Bor Hospital this week after being diagnosed with measles. Speaking in her native Dinka, Malwal says her son developed tiny white spots inside his mouth, fever and cough 1 week ago.
I didn't bring him to the hospital to complete his vaccination because of some home issues. He had red eyes, fever, and cough, but now he is getting better because the doctors are doing the treatment. The sores on his body has disappeared, but only coughing and vomiting are still. I hope he will get well.
21-year-old Rebecca Acholenek says her 1-year-old son, Alier, has symptoms of measles. Speaking in Dinka, Achol says she lives about 8 kilometers from Bor Hospital and has challenges bringing her son for routine vaccinations.
I live at Fanaper village, but it is far from the town. I used to take him to Anyidi Health facility for vaccination. He has been vaccinated on the thighs. He got sick on Friday before he completed all the vaccination, especially the one that is injected on the arm.
Achol Maburluet, a mother of six, has also come to the hospital with one of her children for a checkup. Speaking in Dinka, Luet says she believes her 9-month-old daughter, Amora Yunichau, was infected with measles at Bor Hospital.
When I brought my child to the hospital, the doctor diagnosed her with malaria, but she was admitted near a child that has symptoms of the measles. I did not know that, but now my daughter have similar symptoms, and doctor said it is measles. I suspect my daughter got infected from measles here in the hospital.
Dr. Bol Chau Manyang, the medical director of Bor Hospital, says about 8 children were diagnosed with symptoms of measles at the facility. Dr. Chau says all 8 children are being kept in an isolation facility.
Measles is very serious, and actually is what killed so many children in the 80s, where there was no vaccination in the states.
Dr. Chau warned residents to be on high alert, adding that many cases of measles have been reported at Bor Hospital. He says all parents should get their children vaccinated against the killer disease, which is free.
You have to be coming to any health facility for a child to be vaccinated. But this is just free of charge. You are not charged anything. It's just free, provided by the government and the WHO. And that means that you have to be bringing your child to hospital for immunization.
Okay.
Or else there may be complications later.
Measles is a highly infectious viral illness that can lead to serious complications. Symptoms include a runny nose, sneezing, coughing, and small grayish-white spots on the inside of the cheeks. Dr. Chau says anyone can get measles if they have not been vaccinated or have not had it before, but it is most common among children. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor.
From South Sudan, we move to Cameroon, where villagers in the country's volatile northwest region are fleeing to neighboring Nigeria to escape separatist violence ahead of February 9 local and parliamentary elections. The rebels have vowed to stop the elections and are clashing with the military while civilians are caught up in the fighting. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the border village of Ata in Taraba State, Nigeria.
Christians at True Faith Ministries in the Nigerian border village of Ata sing for God to protect them. 47-year-old Pastor Innocent Okoli says more than 70 of them are Cameroonians who fled increased violence ahead of February 9 elections. He says they crossed the border about 40 kilometers or 29 miles away in the past 2 weeks to escape clashes between Cameroon's military and rebels.
These are Christians with very different experiences. You have Christians who are yet to trace their loved ones. You have many separated children in the church. You have so many unaccompanied children. You know, you cannot just minister to them the word without helping them to get food to eat and then find something to do.
A majority of the Cameroonians are women and children. 18-year-old Regina Shane Najela says she and her younger brother joined a group of women to flee from Cameroon's border village of Ngarum after security clashed with rebels known as Amber Boys.
The Amber Boys entered the quarter, so the policemen came shooting all over. We ran, we slept in the bush. My mother said that she would look for a way. Then I'm here with my junior brother. Before we left there, they burned our house.
Aid group Positive Youth Africa has been providing relief material to Cameroonians fleeing the fighting to Atta. Aid worker Franca Ma'i Sulem Young says it is difficult to estimate how many people have crossed from Cameroon to Nigeria in recent weeks because border villages are difficult to access. But Ibrahim Mustafa, a community leader of the Mamilas ethnic group in Nigeria's Taraba State, says they have received over 300 Cameroonians in the past 2 weeks. The latest violence comes as Cameroon authorities try to hold local council and parliamentary elections in the troubled north and southwest regions. President Paul Biya has insisted the elections will take place and ordered the military to kill all rebels who refuse to surrender. Unrest broke out in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2016. When teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of the French language and French-speaking officials. Rebels took up arms a year later, demanding a separate English-speaking state they call Ambazonia. The conflict with Cameroon's military since then has killed about 3,000 people, many of them villagers caught up in the fighting. The United Nations reports that at least 50,000 Cameroonians have fled the fighting to Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Atta, Nigeria.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the music, Autorité by Congolese music star Koffi Olomide. We've been listening to Koffi Olomide with his latest single, Autorité. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Joseph Berthier. Sous-titrage Société Radio-Canada.